And there we go. We are live. It is Stick to Hockey Live. Yeah, we're actually 2 minutes early. We can skate a lazy shift here to start off the show, Ant.
Very punctual. Overly punctual, some may say.
Usually that's not the case. It's Jason Martinez, Anthony DeMarco, and it is episode 82. Coming up about 1:25. Dave Pagnotta from the fourth period, thefourthperiod.com is going to join us as well. Of course, Ant's work on the fourth period as well. And man, do we have a shitload to talk about today? Because when you talk about shockers in a season, Ant, I don't know that there's two things that are a bigger shocker this season for the Flyers. Number one is that they named a captain. None of us expected that. It comes out of left field and boom, they name a captain in Sean Couturier. And then a couple weeks later here on the 19th of March, we find out that he's healthy scratch from the lineup. Those two things, not mutually exclusive, are shocking unto themselves.
Yeah, I was surprised that they named a captain in Toronto. I believe it was mid-February when they made that decision, seemingly out of left field, after I believe John Tortorella said before the season that they were going to go the entire season without a captain. They named Sean Couturier the captain, which, I mean, if you were going to name a captain this season, he was probably the only choice. And then a month and a half later, not even, he's a healthy scratch. And, I mean, he hasn't been good. He has, what, one assist in the last nine games. He's been relegated to the fourth line. He played, I think, the second least minutes of any forward last game, or any player, maybe. I think it was like a 11 minutes and change.
11 minutes
and then. And then the next step, all of a sudden, is him being a healthy scratch. I mean, you could look at it in a few different ways, but for me personally, I was very shocked that it came to this point.
Yeah, and I, you know, looked at his availability from this morning after the pregame, the morning skate, and it seems as if he's not really sure why he's being scratched. One of the things about John Tortorella is you always know where you stand, but it doesn't seem clear to Sean Couturier that he knows exactly where he stands in this situation.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess it's tough to say, right? Because we're not in the room. It's tough to really dissect exactly what went wrong, where the break of communication is. Clearly, John Tortorella has not been happy with his play. That much is obvious by his usage and his ice time. But to become a healthy scratch on a team that doesn't have a lot of offense or a lot of centers, rather, you're going to move Noah Cates to the middle now to try and make up for this. And that was a line that I had heard that they were happy with, Cates, Paling, and Hathaway. So, yeah. I mean, for them to break up that line, move Noah Cates to the middle where he hasn't played since before the season start or since before the injury at the beginning of the season, John Tortorella must be very not happy or unpleased with the way that Couturier is playing. And do I think that Couturier has played well? No. Is it enough to warrant a healthy scratch? I think that's up for debate because this is a team that I had heard late last night was going to start icing a roster solely with the playoffs in mind. It's no more about developing and not putting, let's say, younger players in fourth line roles. It's no longer about giving veterans a chance to work their way back based on respect and reputation. And I don't know if this is the best lineup with Sean Couturier out of it, but I mean, clearly they feel like he has a lot more to give.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about it is you think about this, like I looked at this 7-game gauntlet of the schedule and I said, Flyers will not survive this gauntlet of the schedule if Sean Couturier is playing under, 13 minutes a night. I didn't even consider that if he's even dressing, I thought that he had to have a bigger role or 12 minutes a night. You know, when you look at, they need to be able to ramp him back up. And, you know, his minutes really dropped off a little while back. And he played so much in the beginning of the year when he was first getting back. And maybe he got by on a lot of that with adrenaline, just working himself back in. But it seems sustainable. And he was, answering the bell every night. He was having a really good season. And then somewhere along the line, all that play kind of caught up with him. And then it seemed to me, even though they weren't saying they were managing his minutes and his energy, looking for kind of a reboot to the last part of the season. That's why I'm just stunned that we are where we are right now. And I agree with you, Ant. The thing about it is you always go, well, get a guy out of there, but what's the alternative? Like I get all these, messages from people like, Stahl and Eric Johnson can't play. And I go, okay, well, that's fine. And have they been great? No, but what's the alternative? The assumption that there's a better alternative, and I think they're going to go with a different alternative when it comes to Stahl in particular, but if not him, who, you know? Well,
that's it.
You know, that's the question. And when you say, if not Couturier, who are, can they potentially be a better team? What is the reason behind, is the reason behind this to just give him a night off? It doesn't sound like it. It sounds punitive.
Yeah. So, I mean, you take Couturier out, Kate shifts to the middle, you break up that line. I imagine, I mean, the lines were all jumbled with five lines yesterday and 15 forwards at practice. Look, Sell's going to get a look here. You imagine Brink draws back in the lineup with Atkinson coming out. Like, I just really don't know if it's a better lineup, because again, you're moving Cates to the middle at this point, a position he hasn't played in several months. You break up a line that I thought was a very consistent line of Cates, Poehling, and Hathaway.
Set it and forget it. That's what I call them.
And like, to be honest, like on a cup winning team, that's probably like a very good fourth line of Cates, Poehling, and Hathaway. Stahl is going to come out for Adam Ginning. I mean, what people forget is that, like, you rewind a month and a half ago, four of their top six defensemen aren't available right now. Yeah. Sealer's hurt, Drysdale's hurt, Risto's hurt, and Sean Walker got traded. So, I mean, I don't know. It's like they clearly don't have a ton of options. And in my opinion, you really are limited at this point for what you could like ice in terms of like a really, really good lineup. So, I mean, again, Stahl comes out, Ginning comes in. How much of an impact is that going to be? How much of an improvement? You want to take Couturier out because he's not playing up to expectations. That's fine. But is it going to make the team better? Clearly John Tortorella thinks so, but I mean, we'll see tonight against a high octane Toronto team who I believe has beaten the Flyers like six straight times or something.
Yeah, and has hung a few big totals on them as well. You know, the thing is this a thing where Torts is trying to will sacrifice the battle to win the war? You know, the big picture here, even though, but you're in a playoff hunt. You know, that seems like penny wise and pound foolish, because every point matters. And to kind of go, okay, I need to scratch a guy to make my point at this time of year is kind of cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Well, that's it. Like, are you making this decision, sitting your captain, just to try and make a point here? Are you going to run the risk of maybe losing the room here at the most important time of the season? Are you going to make your team better by taking Sean Couturier away from the middle of the ice? Like, these are all questions that need to be asked. Now, look, John Tortorella should know better than anyone as to what the answer is to these questions. But from an outsider's point of view, like, you are certainly running a risk. And no one is here saying that Sean Couturier has been playing excellent hockey or he's been playing up to expectations. He clearly looks worn down. He looks slow. But at the end of the day, is Noah Cates being a centerman? Sorry, my cat's trying to enter the chat right now. Mm-hmm. But is Sean Couturier coming out of the lineup going to infinitely improve your roster? And I can't imagine that it's solely based on his on-ice play, because he is the captain. Like, what kind of impact is this going to have intangibly? He's been the captain for a handful of weeks. Like, it's a very bold move, especially when you give in the fact or when you consider the fact that this team is not in a free fall, but really battling for their playoffs lives here. And more so than that, it doesn't look like it's going to get any easier anytime soon with the Murderers Row they have coming up.
Yeah, I mean, the first game he wore the C4 was February 15th against Toronto. That was the 4-3 overtime loss where Austin Matthews had the natural hat trick. And now we sit here just about 5 weeks later, and this is the storyline. The thing I have to wonder too, Ann, is how, when you do something as monumental as healthy scratching a captain that was just recently named, is how do you move forward? What does the landscape look like moving forward for, you know, the relationship of the captain and the head coach? We've heard so much about this room being so much better. Is this, you know, you trade Sean Walker, maybe that has a little impact on the room because there's a subtraction there and there's no significant addition, even though they extend Sealer. and they trade for Eric Johnson. But what's the impact on this room that finally looked like it was, you know, kind of resolved and a positive for the team as opposed to a net negative?
Well, I think it puts everyone on notice that nobody's safe. You're going to have to earn every inch of ice. You're going to have to earn your roster spot. And any kind of goodwill or longer leash for veteran players has been taken away. And, you know, a lot of people have been clamoring about, like, this is a rebuild. Why they're vet? Why are this? You look at all the players, or most of the players that are getting significant ice time right now in roster spots, they are the younger players. You look at the two goaltenders, then you look up front, whether it be Tyson Forster, Morgan Frost, Owen Tippett. I mean, Joel Farabee and Travis Konecny have played for several years, but they, I guess, are still on the younger side of things. Ryan Poehling's still a younger player, despite being a free agent signing. Noah Cates, like, you're going to bring in Lixell and Bobby Brink. Like, I was told that they were only going to bring in Lixell if he was going to get a consistent shot at being in the lineup, not to be brought up from the Phantoms and be a healthy scratch. You look on the back end, you know, Ginning and Addard expected to play over Mark Stahl. I think Zamula has been a slight bright spot over this past stretch of games that has been too positive. Cam York is playing like a stud. So you're seeing a lot of young guys get a lot of prominent positions here, playing big roles for this team. And I think the message is that veterans are going to have to earn their ice. And that could inherently affect the room, especially when one of those veterans is your captain, your longest tenured player, and a guy who just got the C a little over a month ago. So, I mean, there's an inherent risk what John Tortorella is doing right now. He's certainly flirting with, I don't know if we're losing the room is the right, it's fair to say, but he's certainly flirting with upsetting the apple cart after finally getting that room right after a year when he first came in that everyone pretty much publicly admitted was a disaster behind the scenes.
Yeah. It is a fascinating kind of situation that they're now in the middle of this gauntlet of games. Again, Toronto, it's Toronto tonight again, after they played them last Thursday as well and lost, I think the score was 6-2 in that game. Then they'll be in Carolina coming up Thursday. We'll see if, I guess a lot depends on tonight. Couturier draws back in against Carolina, and then back-to-back home games this weekend, Saturday at 1 against Boston, Sunday at 6 against Florida, and then the Rangers ramp up the gauntlet. And then I worry about Montreal and Chicago coming as teams you take lightly after a murderer's row like this. You know, and Cam Atkinson's another guy that's been in and out of the lineup. And I think over his last like 21 games, I think it is, he's a -9. He has no points. And Cam is really struggling. And we know it's not because he's not working hard, because he's doing that, but he is knocking on the door of 35 and missed an entire season. I think that's considerably different even than Couturier, who's just getting to 30, going to 35. And I never looked at Cam Atkinson as a guy that had a half a step to lose. What is the situation with Cam Atkinson both this year and beyond?
To be honest, I would be relatively surprised if we see Cam Atkinson play another game. Like, I wouldn't say that's definitive, but just based on some chatter I've heard over the last couple of days, I think that he kind of had his chance. And he draws in for Boston that I'd heard was for the reason of getting in some veterans who maybe didn't want to, who would be less apt to make mistakes. And he has another bad game. I don't think he really has a role on this team, has lost his niche, obviously isn't producing points. He's just not had a good year. And like you said, like, it's to be expected. It's unfortunate. You miss an entire year and the wheels are just coming off. Father Time is undefeated. You look how loaded that team is, or the Flyers are on the right side. You know, he hasn't proven or hasn't been used on the left side, which you've seen Tippett adapt to or Forster adapt to at times. And I just can't see a world where Cam Atkinson is part of the future anymore. And it's unfortunate. He's a good guy behind the scenes. We know how important he is for the, like, for the room. He's been a good vet. He's been supportive, but like from an on-ice perspective, and even a contractual perspective, if you look at what it would benefit the Flyers to maybe buy him out, I really can't see a world anymore where Cam Atkinson is part of the program moving beyond this season. Like, I think he's a buyout candidate. Is that a definitive thing? No, for sure not. But logic would maybe dictate that with 1 year remaining on his contract. So it's a tough spot for him, but I'd be relatively surprised if he is involved in any capacity moving on beyond well, between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, do you want to extend that cap hit beyond the 1 year left after this when you also have other buyout candidates and Ryan Johansson pending his health? Because you can't buy a guy out or send him down when he's injured and unavailable. And also Cal Peterson as well. But again, do you want to extend those cap? Because you're extending them when you buy them out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you just send Cam Atkinson to the Phantoms next year? I don't know what you do. I don't know what you do.
Maybe out of respect, you buy him out so he could pick his next destination. He doesn't get relegated to the Phantoms if he wants to go sign a one-year tryout deal with another team. That maybe is a respectful thing. But again, then he's losing two-thirds of his remaining salary. So it's a very sticky situation with Cam Atkinson.
Yeah.
But from an on-ice perspective, I don't know how anyone could justify keeping him here beyond this year. They've given him a lot of chances. He's been in and out of the press box. He had that little stretch in January where he looked like he was maybe turning a corner. Yeah. But at this point, the wheels have just seemed to come off, and he certainly has lost his niche on this team.
What about Johansson? What's the deal there, Ant? They put him through waivers. He cleared with the intent to send him down. Then they find out they can't send him down because he's injured. What's the situation here with Ryan Johansson? I haven't seen him. Is he even around the team? Is he getting medical treatment in the building? Like, what's the deal with him?
Well, I think it was reported on 3-2 Thoughts by Elliot Friedman that they did find something, the Flyers doctors. His representation told the Flyers that he's been dealing with something all season. Seemed like it was news to the Flyers. I don't know what the next step is. I don't get the sense that Ryan Johansson wants to report to Lehigh Valley. I don't get the sense that the Flyers have an appetite to bring him to the main roster. At this point, I think that, you know, there's some speculation, perhaps, that it would be more advantageous for Ryan Johansson to go on IR for the duration of his contract, avoid that buyout, avoid losing the third of his remaining money. But it seems that everything's on the up and up to this point, that there is an issue with Ryan Johansson. I believe it's something to do with his hip.
Yeah.
But at this point, I would be shocked if he plays a factor in any capacity with the Flyers' main roster between now and pretty much ever. I think that was strictly a cap dump to obtain that first round pick via the Sean Walker trade.
Is there reparations that can be made because they didn't know about an injury when they acquired him?
Well, he has to pass a physical, right? So, I mean, it seemed like he was fine. I remember that happened with the Flyers about 15 years ago where they traded for Kyle MacLaren.
Yeah.
And then the trade got abolished because he didn't pass the physical.
Yep.
The trade went through. So something must have happened beyond the after the trade. It's a very weird situation. Seems kind of coincidental that he went to the team with a coach that he has a bad history with and a documented bad history with. Everyone knows about the history between Johansson and Tortorella going back to their days together with the Columbus Blue Jackets. I don't know. It's a weird situation. At this point, it seems that everything was on the up and up when the trade was made. But it also does seem that the Flyers doctors did find something. So at this point, it just seems like something that the Flyers have to deal with, unfortunately.
Yeah. And so he could be an LTIR candidate. Does Ryan Ellis finally come off after this year? Does he have one more year after this?
No, I think he has like 3 more years after
this.
Oh, my
goodness. Jeez.
Yeah.
These LTIR long, it's crazy. The league's got to find a way to kind of deal with this. But we'll see how that plays out as well as the team's trying to get, you know, fiscally healthy again. They have to some degree, but we'll see how this plays out with those three players, Ryan Ellis, Cam Atkinson, and Ryan Johansson. This is wild. Yeah. When you look at this team at, and, you know, you look at the blue line in particular, like with Staal, do you think Staal gets back in this year? Or is this, you know, calling up Adam Ginning? I like the game that he played when he did come up for the one.
Yeah.
And we saw him last year as well. He's a big body, he can move. And I think they're at a position with him where if he doesn't start to find an NHL home, he could be going back home to Sweden as well. Do we get a good extended look at Ginning the remainder of the way here, going, okay, it's probably our best option. And even though it's an experienced option, we got to go with it.
Look, like I've heard some chatter this morning from several people in and around the organization that it's a loose timeline, so this isn't fact in any capacity, but I think that the timeline for guys like Drysdale and Ristolainen is 2 weeks or so. But these 2 weeks can make or break the Flyers season, right? So they need some important wins. They need to get points. Luckily, it hasn't seemed like the Islanders or the Devils or the Capitals could make up that much traction. I do believe the Capitals are 2 points out on them now. I think they've leapfrogged the Detroit Red Wings for the final wildcard spot. But they need some good play right now. And unfortunately for Mark Stahl, who is, what, less than a year removed from being an important piece on the Florida back end that went to the Stanley Cup final, he's on option right now. He's been not good whatsoever. He was called on when the Flyers lost four of their top six defensemen a month and a half ago, and he just hasn't been a solid presence. And I mean, when you see guys get acquired like Eric Johnson, or guys leapfrog him like Adam Ginning or Ronnie Attard, it kind of tells you where they're at with Mark Stahl. Again, barring injuries between now and when guys like Seeler, Drysdale, and Risto get back, I would find it hard to imagine seeing Stahl get back into the game here. As you mentioned, maybe this is a good opportunity to get a look at Ginning. He was, what, drafted in 2018, so 6 years removed from his draft year. It's kind of, you know, shit or get off the pot time for him. You need to find out what you have, especially with younger D coming up with Andre and Hunter McDonald and Oliver Bunk a few years down the line. But I mean, this is a good opportunity. And I think Ginning looked good in that game. It was against the Panthers, right, that he played?
Correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's going to be a good look for him. He's going to pair with Ronnie Attard, I assume, who he obviously has played with down with Lehigh Valley. But as far as Stahl goes, I'd be pretty shocked if we see him again, barring something extreme.
You know, it's interesting because I had a conversation with Yegor Zamula at the Flyers Carnival. I did an interview with him that I'm going to feature on Flyers Daily this week. And he talked a ton about last year and how much Artem Anisimov helped him out. You know, an old NHL veteran and Anisimov, and would teach him, because Zamula would have a bad period and wouldn't be able to bounce back from it, and how Artie would teach him, you know, how to, you know, not let the one period affect the next period, or one shift affect the next, or one game affect the next. And he talked about how much Anisimov helped out a guy like Tyson Forster to not always be trying to play at top speed, but vary your speed. And, you know, even though Stahl may not get in the lineup, he can help guys in that regard off the ice, how to be a, you know, an NHL pro. Guy went to a cup final last year, so I think he does have something to offer, even if it's not on the ice.
Yeah.
So I think that would be fine. When you look at, you know, this team and the needs and seeing what we see down the stretch here, whether it's from Ginning or whoever, we know that Sealer's on that left side. He signs the contract extension. We know York is going to be on that left side. Are they going to look for left side support coming up in the offseason that maybe would push Seeler into a third pairing situation next year? We heard the name Jacob Chychrun. We heard the name Thomas Chabot, both Ottawa Senators. You know, do you think Danny goes big game hunting this offseason to bolster that D moving forward? Because I don't think you can really have any progress unless you improve on your back end. And with the loss of Sean Walker, I mean, I don't even know what the hell is going on with Risto. Like, every time he gets hurt, he seems to just kind of evaporate from the consciousness. So do you think that's something that'll happen? And is there a subtraction there too? Like, maybe a Ristolainen trade in the offseason?
Well, I think that there's certainly, I could tell you with certainty that they planted seeds for trades to maybe be revisited in the summer. I do think finding a long-term partner for Jamie Drysdale is something on the docket for this team. Like, you look at young defensemen around the NHL, even top flight defensemen, whether that was Makar or Quinn Hughes, like these guys always, or not always, but you need veteran partners or solid partners for these guys. And you look at Makar, they go out and they get Devon Toews, and they have become arguably the best defensive pairing in the NHL. You look at Quinn Hughes early on in his career, he played with Tanev, he looked awesome. They get rid of Tanev, he flounders for a year or two. And then they bring in Filip Hronek, and what do you know? He's arguably the best defenseman in the NHL. So I think that getting a partner for Jamie Drysdale, who is an offensive guy, that new age type of defenseman, is imperative for success. And you look at that defense, and there is no clear-cut number one. York is playing that way right now, but is he that consistently? Sanheim's more of a two or a three. We don't know what Drysdale is. So I think going out and getting a clear-cut number one defenseman to complement a guy like Jamie Drysdale is certainly something that is on the docket for the Flyers front office. Now, could Ginning maybe sway them where he could make that decision tougher? For sure. But I don't know if between now and the end of the regular season, he's going to prove to them that they don't need to go out and pursue, for example, a guy like Jacob Chychrun. And for Ronnie Attard, I think this is a big opportunity for him maybe make a guy like Rasmus Ristolainen expendable. Because let's be honest, Risto, he was a number five guy, but he was very solid in that role. And you've seen the drop-off of Risto not being on that third pair to a guy like Erik Johnsson. And yes, is he overpaid? For sure. Is he a number five guy on most teams? 100%. But he's been solid. But if you see enough in Ronnie Attard that you say, okay, he could plug in for Risto and be a solid third pair option with a Nick Seeler, then that opens up the ability to move off of Ristolainen, who, you know, the cap is going up, 3 years left at $5.1 million. Maybe there's more teams in the summer that want to take a look at that guy who provides those intangibles, physicality, and all that stuff. So it's a big opportunity for Ronnie Attard. Adam Ginning, I mean, maybe it kind of moves the needle a bit that maybe he could come in next year and be your number seven. I think he's competing with Igor Zamula as well, like who could be the number seven next year. But I mean, I think the biggest guy to gain from all of this is Ronnie Attard, because obviously you have Walker who was moved out, Drysdale's injured, Risto's injured. And I think that Risto's future, not to say that they're actively shopping him, but I don't think they'd be opposed to moving him if a guy like Ronnie Attard proved that he was worthy of getting a chance on that third pair, and as a cheaper option for sure.
Yeah, it definitely gives you a lot more cap flexibility, even if you've retained a little bit on Ristolainen as well. Kolesov finished his season over in the Continental Hockey League, and you know, he can come over now and sign. He's already signed his entry level contract. Do we see Kolesov with the Phantoms? Could we see Kolesov play a game with the Flyers?
Now, look, I think Jonesy alluded to it on Stow the Goalie, that they were looking for a Russian goalie to come over sooner rather than later. Our good buddy Anthony Sanfilippo mentioned it in his article a few weeks ago that was the expectation. If I was a betting man, I think we see Kolesov come over between now and 2 weeks. I think starts with the Phantoms. I wouldn't be shocked if we see him get a game or two with the Flyers based on the fact that, you know, Sandstrom hasn't been great. He's had his moments, but he hasn't been perfect. But yeah, I think that's definitely something that the Flyers are hoping for. Not definitive, but definitely hoping for.
There he is, Dave Pagnotta, joining us at the Fourth Period on Twitter and from thefourthperiod.com. Dave, you look like you're rested and recovered from trade deadline. You look like you're in a rainforest.
Yeah, my room's not ready yet. I'm in Florida, so just migrating from different spots. But
GM meetings.
A little bit of that, a little bit of getaway for the rest of the week, a little escape for this, a little recharge actually after deadline and pre-playoff. So I'll take it.
Dave, what's on the agenda for the GM meetings? This is the more serious GM meeting that takes place and where you tend to get some definitive action plans. What's kind of the big thing in the league right now that the GMs are going to tackle this week, debate and see if they can institute and move forward?
You know, today, a bunch of rule changes that are, you know, going to the next level in terms of recommendations towards them. Puck over glass turning into a coach's challenge, you know, things of that nature. There's several of them that are going to be addressed towards next steps. It goes to the committee if everybody agrees, and it goes to the Board of Governors for approval and things of that nature. So this is, you know, GM meetings every year. This is kind of getting the ball rolling on any potential changes that occur with respect to, you know, in-game, out-of-game progress. LTIR is going to be another topic of discussion in terms of just making sure that things are still on the level, that nobody's taking advantage of it, that the league is doing what they're supposed to do to avoid teams taking advantage of LTIR space and things of that nature. I think everybody, for whatever reason, the narrative seems to be that Mark Stone is coming back game one of the playoffs, and that's already been set in stone. It's not. I don't know why that's a public narrative, but he's probably out till May by the sounds of things. But I don't know, everybody's kind of rolling with that one. But again, just making sure that that's an area that's being addressed, and making sure that the league continues to police it. And let's get an update on expansion. Where are we at with the Coyotes? Where are we at here, there, and everywhere with different league matters? So this is always a good 3-day fest to get all the GMs in one place. Everybody kind of talks things out. You have the new GM committee that was created a few years ago to kind of start things off and take the lead on a few things. And again, once recommendations come in, then it gets kind of pushed over to the other committee, the Board of Governors, and so on.
So one team that doesn't have a GM in place right now is the Columbus Blue Jackets. Yeah. And there's been some whispers today that we could see a Mark Hunter get in the mix for that. And with Columbus not having a general manager, clearly is in a period of transition here. The first GM changed with that organization for over a decade. Do mm-hmm. you see a direction for that team? And is Mark Hunter a legitimate candidate for them?
I think he is. I don't know if they've narrowed down candidates just yet. I think they're still going through that exploratory process of who they want to consider for the position, who they want to eventually interview, you know, for the job. They haven't done it internally yet. That's, again, they're kind of narrowing down some, and by narrowing down, I mean, they probably have a list of 50 people, and they want to cut that down to probably a dozen and then start the process. But yeah, Mark Hunter is going to be somebody that is going to be given consideration, some ties to some people in the organization. And I think he's going to be one of several candidates, including some of the internal, that'll you know, get an opportunity to put their foot forward and try to take that position. But what seems clear with the way that this team is made up, with, you know, Johnny Gaudreau and up front, Zach Werenski on the back end, the youth that they've got, the young guys that are really stepping up for this group, this is a, we don't need to rebuild. We've got young foundational pieces in place. Now it's about evolving their talent and continuing that process. So whoever comes in is going to be coming in with a game plan that mirrors that of ownership and that of John Davidson's. And that's, all right, let's take the next steps here. Let's get ready to compete. And whether that's, you know, trading someone like Elvis Merzlikins or solidifying his position in goal, stabilizing the blue line, bringing in more talent up front. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, but it's making sure everyone's on the same track. And for Columbus, like other teams that have gone through rebuilds, it's now about next steps moving forward, and let's get into a level of where we can compete for a wild card position and then go from there.
I imagine that's going to be a big part of that process of when guys pitch their plan. What's yeah. your plan for a team that they feel like they do have some pieces yeah. in place to move rather rapidly? Dave, fallout from the NHL trade deadline, we saw some really big names move around and, you know, benefit certain teams. And you know, you look at a team like Dallas who maybe jumped the market a little bit, but Ottinger has not been great. Who's really put themselves in a driver's seat? I mean, you look at the West, I don't know who the hell's coming out of the West, out of the first round, let alone for the Cup. Who's really put themselves in a good position here based on deadline?
Yeah, you know, I still like Dallas. I still really do, because, you know, for them, it was stabilizing the decor by bringing in Tanev. And I spoke to Jim Neal last week, and, you know, he's like, I hope this is a long-term play. Let's see how he gets acclimated. Let's focus on the season, and then we'll get to that. But I think the notion there is try to make this a fit that's not just a rental. Yes, Jake Ottinger needs to kind of wake up a little bit, you know, in terms of what he's capable of. But they didn't have to go out and get other pieces. And this is something that Neil explained to me. So look, we have Logan Stankoven, who's been phenomenal. You have Maverick Bork in the A. You've got other pieces, Blummel and others in the AHL as well. They're already deep. They didn't necessarily have to go out and augment the roster too much without bringing in Tanev. For me, I still really like Dallas, even though there's a bit of a dip period right now. I like what that whole Central is just a mess. Like, that's going to be a dogfight. And I like what Colorado did. I like the fact that you bring in Mittelstadt as your 2C, you upgrade on the back end with Sean Walker, we're all familiar with, and then you bring in Trennan and Duhaime to just take control of that bottom six and add a little bit more two-way play and also some physicality. I like that. I like what Winnipeg did with Monahan and then bringing in Miller for the back end and Toffoli up front. Like, that is going to be – whoever doesn't finish first in that division, I mean, that's tough. Because now you're in one hell of a first-round matchup.
Oh, the 2-3 is going to be off the charts.
Yeah. I can't wait. I can't wait for that. But, you know, and then you go to the Pacific and you've got Vancouver and you've got Edmonton and you've got Vegas, L.A., and everybody kind of battling. Like, the West, I think the top eight are set. And it's going to be crazy. But I like what all three Central teams did. I really do. And I like what Florida did. I like the fact that they brought in a happy, excited Vlad Tarasenko. And they were able to bring in a depth veteran in the room, kind of top quality person in Okposo as well. So the dust has settled, but still impactful moves for all of those teams.
So obviously you're based in Toronto. They kind of add on the margins with Joel Edmondson and Ilya Labushkin and Connor Dewar from the Minnesota Wild. Do you think that they did enough to put themselves in the same realm as the Florida Panthers or the top dogs in the East? Or is this a team that maybe is aware that, hey, this maybe isn't the best year to push all our chips in the middle like we did last year with O'Reilly and Luke Shen and all those additions that they made? Like, where do you think Toronto's at internally, and where do you see them in, as far as contenders in the Eastern Conference?
They're going to have to play Boston or Florida in the first round.
Oof.
That's tough. Yeah. I like their chances better with Boston than I do with Florida. But even if you get past Boston, it's probably only 6 or 7. More likely than not, you're going to have to face the Panthers in round two. So I think they recognize that. I think looking at this roster, I think they also recognize that this is probably not the year to go in again, or all in again. I like the additions of Labushkin and Edmondson on the back end. But, overall, it's not enough for me, for this group. I think there's a lot of tweaking that needs to be done in the summer with respect to this roster. And now you've got Mitch Marner dealing with a high ankle sprain that is supposed to be mild. But he's, I think what was Keith said the other day, he's day to day from being day to day.
And he didn't make the trip.
Yeah, exactly. He's not on the road with them. So that's not the best sign. Now, obviously, this comes into play after the fact, after the deadline. But, looking at this group, looking at the Leafs, seeing them on a regular basis, I wouldn't have gone in all in either. I think they're a good team. They're a really good regular season team, but they're not next. Those next steps come playoff time. It's just not there for them. And they're not the only ones. Like, there are other teams that made some moves. I like what Edmonton did. I don't think it's enough in terms of, can you get past round one, two, maybe? I don't think it's, cup quality. Despite having, the leading or one of the leading scorers in the league. And then Toronto, you've got the leading goal scorer. Great. You're still missing both of those teams, missing some intangible pieces. So from Toronto's perspective, I like them overall, but I don't put them in the same class as the Florida.
And they'll be inferior to whoever their competition is in round one and two in goal as well. Dave, right. Last thing for
other
you.
Other factors.
The salary cap's going to go up this summer, to a very tangible margin for the first time in a long time. And we see teams like Vegas that just trades first round picks like it's nothing. And the way they've built a team and the way teams have been winning cups in goal without, the super stud with like Aiden Hill or whoever it might be. Do you expect this summer to be one of those ones where you're going to see a lot of big names move around the league, teams like Toronto that need, some big, more than just minor facelifts changes to their team, but really big moves to reshape rosters for the first time in a while?
I think we're going to have a really active summer.
I do too.
I do, because of the fact that cap is going up, and it's going up next, the following season as well. The max that can go up every season is 5%. It's projected to go up 5%. Obviously this year's set or next season, but the season after that is projected to go up another 5%. So, in two seasons from now, we're sitting at $92 million or just over. So between a lot of groundwork that was done over the trade deadline period for a lot of teams. Ottawa, Montreal, Anaheim to a certain extent, Philly to a certain extent, Buffalo as well, and so on and so on and so on. Detroit, you're gonna see a lot of activity and a lot of movement. And you know, are we going to? And then there's the goalie market. Like, are we gonna see Markstrom and Saros and Ullmark, and maybe Gibson? Are these guys going to be swapping all over the place? I think we're going to see a lot of different storylines. Like, I think Ullmark is getting traded. I think Saros is getting traded. Markstrom, probably, but I mean, we'll obviously wait and see how that goes, if New Jersey can make that happen. But I think the other two guys are getting traded. Like, I like Saros, 1 year left on his contract, so does Ullmark. But, you know, with Askarov coming up, they love what he's doing. If they weren't on this little run that they've been on,
he'd be playing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And Saros would be on another team. But they'll deal with that in the summer. So I think we're going to see a lot of activity and a lot of movement, and we're going to see hockey type trades too, which is exciting because of that groundwork that was done and the foundational pieces that were done leading up to deadline. So it's going to be exciting. I think, I also hope, because, you know, you never know. There's always the talk, and then everybody kind of just steps back a little bit. But and I want to see teams be a little more bold, like Vegas. Like, they're moving their picks and their top prospects, but they're not doing it for 35, 36, 37-year-olds. They did it for Jack Eichel. He's there a long time. They did it for Hurdle. He's there another six seasons after this one. Like, they're not just making these moves and saying, we'll worry about it tomorrow. Tomorrow's 5, 6, 7 years from now. There's still a lot of capital that can be built up within that time frame. And if you walk away with another championship or two,
it's worth it.
You justify it.
Yeah. And we see a guy like Mittelstadt get moved, obviously. You know, another guy, a younger guy, goes to Colorado. I think that's all foreshadowing as to what's to come this offseason as well. Now, Dave, enjoy the R&R and GM meetings down in Florida. Thanks for jumping on, as always. Appreciate it. We'll read your work at thefourthperiod.com.
Sounds good. See you, boys. Thank you.
There he is, Dave Pagnotta, and Dave does great work, and we appreciate him taking the time, as always. I think it's going to be a juggernaut of a summer.
For sure. It's going to be a big one, I think.
Yeah. I mean, the weaponization of cap space is going to be a huge thing this summer. I think you're going to see more three-team deals and, you know, bringing a third team in to take a little bit of a hit off the cap for a team that's trying to push. You know, Toronto's like got to be in that mix.
Yeah, for sure.
At this point, if Tampa wants to kind of hang on, if they choose not to sign Stamkos, how do they, kind of do that with what they can still capitalize with Hedman, Vasilevsky, and Kucherov and Point? You know, though, to me, there's really some big movers and shakers. I look at a team like LA, like the Kings too. You know, like, where are they? Are they going to push for one more with Doughty and Kopitar and the young players that they have mixed in there as well? So I think there's a lot of, not to mention Vancouver and Edmonton, and is Calgary going to be an active team? Yeah, I think there's just some really important markets that are going to be in that mix.
Yeah, no, and like you said, with finally like a tangible increase, like a big increase of the salary cap, I think it's going to open up a lot of trades. And I think that we're finally coming out officially of that COVID era. And yeah. I think a lot of teams laid some groundwork for the summer when they knew that they were going to get that $3-4 million in salary cap boost.
Yeah, and then not only this year, but you know it's going to be the next year as well, and then the year after that. So you can start planning your flow chart of how you're going to handle your cap going forward, get healthy now to spend later or whatever it might be. And will it be possible to kind of, you know, the Flyers are going to be in need of that 1C. I guess they're on paper top center is going to be a healthy scratch tonight and their captain. But are they going to be able to go out there and get a 1C to have with Mishkov when he comes over and, you know, be able to, because you're going to have a top line center and they just don't seemingly have that now.
Yeah, like easier said than done. We've heard Trevor Zegras's name thrown around. Not sure how serious those talks are, but it feels like there was at least some interest on the Flyers' part. They did at least some due diligence. I mean, who else is a top line?
I don't even think he's a center.
No, well, that's it. A lot of people feel like he's a winger. And if he is a center, is he that number one center? You know, like those number one centers don't become available every day. You know, you have to look for like those hockey trade type of things or through the draft or what have you. And maybe you had that in Cutter Gauthier. I don't think he's going to be a center in the NHL. Going to be a hell of a player, but not going to be a center. I mean, you have to find ways to go out and get them, kind of like Montreal did with the likes of Newhook and Doc. And they even traded for Nick Suzuki, who's their number one center and their captain. Like, you have to find hockey trades to bring in someone like that, similar to what they did with Gauthier to Drysdale, but the reverse. Now you got to bring in a centerman. So you have to do your due diligence. I know the Flyers have been looking around the NHL for centermen. They haven't found one yet, but I do think it's something that they're definitely keeping a close eye on, because they're well aware. For everyone that says, you know, they don't have talent, they don't have enough talent, they don't have enough talent, they are well aware that they don't have enough talent, but it's a work in progress.
Yeah, which is why they dealt Sean Walker.
Exactly.
He would have helped them immeasurably right now.
Oh, for sure.
And you still trade him and you end up with that first round pick in next year's draft. Two first round picks in this one coming up and then two the year after. What do you say we wrap it up there? Anything else you want to get to?
Nope, that's it. Just check out our work on the fourth period. Obviously calm down a bit post-trade deadline. But big game today against the Toronto Maple Leafs, and hopefully we could touch base again next week.
No doubt about it. Flyers-Leafs tonight at Wells Fargo. We'll see if the Flyers can make the third time the charm against the Leafs this season. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. We'll talk to you next week on yet another brand-new episode of Stick to Hockey Live. Have a great day, everybody.